Maybe I'll say how I'm going to hold the session today. I'm going to have a guided practice first. Some teaching, roughly around 20 minutes. And then a second guided practice. Both of the guided practices are, they're kind of the same kind of exercise or exploration, but working with a different aspects of experience. So the first will be opening to sound, and the second opening to the various ways we experience and sense the body. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. Maybe to say, with these sessions, they're a little looser. There'll be chance after my offerings in the first hour for open questions, reports, things like that. And then an option for people who want to mingle a little in small breakout groups. Yahal and I offered some looser drop-in sessions over the summer. I'm offering these, which are maybe even a little more, have a little more Sangha emphasis. Part of what I feel like my mandate, part of my mandate from Rob was to be creative and to explore ways for people to connect around deep practice outside of retreat. So part of that is how I collaborate and offering courses and things like that. And this is another piece of it. Retreat practice is beautiful. It's not always available. It can be kind of, you know, exclusive to those who have the lifestyle and the money, and it often involves travel. So these were things on Rob's mind, and just sort of, that was just something he communicated to me, and also something I care a lot about making available. So here we are with this space that is sort of geared at people who are really engaged with their insight practice, working with Rob's teachings. Anyway, let's see how it goes. As I mentioned, I'm going to start with a guided practice. This will be, I don't know, around 15 minutes, and then go into the teaching. And then we'll have a time to sit again. Just taking a couple of minutes to find our posture, settle into our meditation posture. Appreciate the intentionality of placing our body in a way that's suitable for meditation. Might be seated, might be reclining or standing. It's all fine. Just being sensitive to the body, checking out whether or not there is anything we can do, any small adjustments that might support more balance, more uprightness, more openness. And settling the mind, inviting the mind to settle, however that might work best for you. Could be opening to the experience of the body breathing. Maybe simply giving the mind permission to take some time off. Instead, come and join the experience of the body. So for this period of practice, we'll be opening to the sounds in your environment. So to begin, just noticing what's prominent. What's most noticeable. This may be familiar sounds. It certainly will involve hearing my voice. You're tuning into it on the level of instruction. But it also has this quality of a kind of energy in sound form. Starting, stopping. You may be noticing persistent sounds, intermittent sounds that come and go. Just listening, just open that way. Now, encouraging your attention to tune in more subtly, encouraging a sensitivity of hearing, becoming most curious about the quieter, maybe vaguer aspects of the soundscape. Just going below the waterline a bit and opening to what you might discover there. Quiet vibrations, also including the silence, opening to that. Opening to the fullness of this field of sound. Some areas, some directions may bring mostly silence or quiet. For some, it may feel there's a ground of silence in which the sounds are held. For some, there may be a sense of the location of the silence. Some sense that space or silence holds or fills the place. When a more noticeable sound recedes, just noticing how it feels to open this way to the space of sound. So now letting go of the privileging of either noticeable or more subtle. Opening to the whole field of sound. Sensing the wholeness of it. Open awareness, open attention, possibly unifying the sense of the disparate qualities of sound. Also, may be possible to see if there's some common quality pervading the soundscape that you can tune into that also holds or unifies or permeates. Maybe a sense that all sound is a manifestation of some kind of energy. A field of vibration. Or if you were sensitive to the presence of silence, of quiet, it may be a sense that the silence both surrounds and can be known in any aspect of this field of sound. So the silence or the absence may be felt within or permeate soften, dissolve the more noticeable aspects to some degree. Just playing with whatever possibility shows up for you. Could be something else. Some other broader frequency of sound you can tune into. Some quality. Just taking a minute or two to appreciate the sense of it, how it feels to listen that way. So I'm going to speak a little bit. We'll refer to the practice we did in different ways. Maybe before I start, I don't know. My approach for what I'm offering in these sessions is to offer primarily ways to work with releasing more subtle clinging. So working with how we're sensing things, attending to things, more on this level of perception, that's the kind of angle I'm taking. In a way, it means that talking about it, it becomes quite technical in a way, a little, it's like brass tacks, nitty gritty, kind of working with these materials of our consciousness and how we perceive. So I hope it won't be too dry. It certainly relies on kind of talking about certain frameworks to support talking that way. I think many, if not most of you, are quite familiar with Rob's teachings, his book, his approach to insight practice. What I share will kind of rest on that. So if you're not so familiar and you're here, you're very welcome to stay and just, you know, take what you get from it, and the guided practices hopefully will be easy enough to just enter into. I love this side of practice. I love the kind of nitty gritty, the art of it is like a, for me, it feels like a kind of holy craft. You know, it's a real, it's very intimate. It's very close to who we are. And it is certainly in service of what we're doing with our practice, and hoping through our practice to open a real depth of freedom and to open the ways in which we are closed and limited and blocked. But there's something, I don't know, I kind of, I love the directness of this side of working with practice, working very not much on this perceptual level. I was an artist. I am an artist, but there's been, you know, the reason I'm an artist is because I'm in it for the beauty, or in it for the contact with the mystery, and somehow in it to communicate that with others. But I love the craft of it too. Yeah, it's not separate. So I don't know. I feel that way here. So yeah, maybe that's just my way of softening the blow before I like say a bunch of kind of boring technical things. I hope not. But that's how I hold this, and part of what I'm excited and happy to have a space where that might be of interest and shared. So insight practice, working with insight ways of looking, in support of the deepening of our understanding of emptiness. That's the kind of broad ground. Rob defines insight practice as working with ways of looking that have the likelihood to release suffering, to reduce suffering. So that's the kind of terrain we're working with. What must be there to support the building of suffering? Or on the more subtle side of the spectrum, what must be there for experience to be built, to be fabricated? It's something about the relationship of clinging that has to be there. It's something about the sense of the self as distinct, inherently existing from its own side somehow. And that phenomena, objects of attention, things of the world, exist that way too, yeah? So this relationship of clinging must be held by the sense of the separateness of self and the sense of phenomena as inherently existing somehow. Within the book, Rob includes in the later ways that he talks about subtle dependent origination, what builds and holds experience, as also relying on a sense of time. Yeah, so that's another kind of piece. We look at this as a mutual dependency, which is how it's framed in the way Rob is articulating insight practice and the path and what we're doing. It offers a lot of possibility to come in and practice from different directions. Yeah. The sense of self relies on this relationship of clinging and grasping and aversion, and also the sense of a thing, a phenomena to be in relationship to. So it's a kind of, it really opens up the possibility that we can work with practices that work with one or more aspects and come in from a certain angle. Maybe I'll read a quote from Seeing That Freeze in case what I said was not fully clear, just to kind of underline for me what the kind of space, the terrain that we'll be working within. Self-fabrication is always tied up with the fabrication of one or more phenomena. We can see that self-construction depends on something being reacted to, made an issue of, or viewed in certain ways. That thing may be conceived as an inner phenomena or an outer one, but the sense of self cannot be supported without depending on something or other as a kind of base. Self-construction always relies on clinging, on reactivity, and view with regard to something. The phenomena thus regarded, though, just like the self-sense and self-view, is also pumped up, constructed in the process of constructing the self. Fabrication of a thing and fabrication of the self are mutually dependent. Yeah, so that, in a way, that's kind of describing the playing field. Maybe I will just kind of point out some of the aspects of this mutual dependency that I'm particularly going to be playing with and working with here. And that's a kind of the premise of how I'm sharing over these sessions, is looking at certain kinds of capacities or tendencies or habits of the mind that must be there to support clinging, and pulling them out, as opposed to working with a particular practice, which might, you know, emphasize a certain aspect or more than one. But it's just kind of looking at our practice and looking at practice from a different angle. Which for me is a really empowering one. Yeah, it allows us to make connections between different practices we've done, maybe ways we practiced, 10 years ago before we ever read Rob's book. We can kind of understand something about it. It allows for different kind of, allows us to make connection between our samadhi or jhana practice and our insight practice. So that's kind of the premise. Some particular ways that the mind must sort of work in order to support this relationship of clinging. One, distinction making, distinction between the sense of self and the sense of thing, the sense of other, the sense of, the object of attention. Also, making distinction between thing and thing. Yeah, that's sort of must also be happening. This thing is worth giving my attention to, or grasping, or being aversive towards, and that one's not. Or all this stuff is not really important, and just not some other category. Yeah, working with the relationship of clinging itself directly, not so much with the self sense or the sense of the thing. The grasping or the aversion and the intensity of it. Yeah. What I'm working with mostly today is something about the way our attention is selective and how that supports this process of clinging. How it tends to get kind of sucked into what is standing out and tends to kind of winnow out or ignore or de-emphasize everything else. Yeah. So working with that tendency, that's part of what must be there for clinging to happen. It's part of what makes the distinction. It also tends to, when the attention is very narrow, we're really drawn to something, it tends to increase or kind of build more sense of self, more sense of phenomena. Attention's narrow. And so what it's noticing is filling up the fullness of the real estate of attention, or relatively more of it. Yeah, it's bigger, it's more present, it's more in the room. So that'll be kind of working there today, playing with that. What one attends to, or say what is deemed most relevant, part of how that happens is because the self-sense, this whole kind of relationship, it relies on what you might call a self-centered perspective or a self-oriented perspective. So things are known and held in relationship to the self and the self-sense. And that interpretation then kind of comes back and builds the self-sense. And there's that back and forth. So ways of practicing, won't be today, but in other sessions, ways of working with that self-centered perspective and trying to soften that or dismantle it. So any of these ways of coming in, and this is just what I've kind of picked to work with, but they will pull one piece out of that mutual dependency and then open the possibility of some sort of softening, opening, diminishment of clinging, bringing some ease. So the practice today that we did, and then we'll work again within the field of the body, it is working against the tendency of the mind to just kind of notice what is somehow most dominant, seems most relevant, or in the strongest relationship with, etc., and just using the attention in a different way and seeing what happens, seeing if something's released, seeing if it gives us a different perspective. A way to see a different way of looking, if you will, yeah, by playing with just that piece and then being able to have an experience of something quite mundane from a different perspective, yeah, that might open in towards something that's more unitive or less contracted or less dense. So something about being sensitive to the background, the possibility of maybe flipping what one is privileging in the attention, or finding ways to kind of open to a particular aspect of experience or the whole field of experience in a kind of more unitive way. And part of that in what was in the instruction, and I'll offer it again, is also the possibility to tune into certain kinds of frequencies of experience in order to soften this distinction making that happens, and just see what happens from that. See what opens, see if anything softens. I like this kind of sometimes teaching from this perspective and also practicing from this perspective of looking at these kinds of tendencies of mind or these aspects of the mutual dependency. One, because I think it makes very clear the through line between the different strata of experience that we can be working with. So, you know, if this is how stuff gets built, it works on the level of personality or the level of our relationships or on the level of our emotions, as well as in these more kind of subtle ways that have to do with perception if I want to say like conceiving, but that kind of wordless conceiving, just how we know things, just how we sense things in a very immediate way. You could certainly take this kind of approach of working with the, you know, opening the attention and encouraging a noticing of what is maybe not highlighted into the realm of relationship or on that level of personality. It's a very common way people work with that in kind of a Dharma context. I'm in a unpleasant, intense argument with someone who's very important to me. Things are contracted, things are polarized, and my attention is probably going to privilege the things that support the clinging. You know, that person is, I'm seeing them as just basically their worst qualities, or I'm seeing myself as, you know, kind of a wronged in a certain way and not much else. So you can work with opening and looking for that person's good qualities or the causes and conditions that may have come into play to make to bring that person to act in a certain way, or that would contribute to the way I'm reacting. Or you could bring in a flavor of metta, a spirit of metta, offer that to both parties, and it can have that quality of unifying, you know, the ways that we all want to be loved, the ways that we all want safety, the ways that we all want to be happy, you know, and that kind of connecting. When we're exploring on releasing on a very subtle level, you know, it's not so much about how we think about it, because this stuff is all happening before we're thinking, before we're conceiving. You know, if very subtle clinging is the merest perceiving something coming through the sense doors, it's not generally not too effective to just say like, I'm not going to do that. You know, it's, you got to work on a different level, a more subtle level. So, you know, a lot of what is involved or can be involved, is encouraging the attention to work in a different way. Yeah. And just kind of popping something different out, allowing a kind of releasing to happen that way. Some practices that we might work with on this more subtle level, they're somehow kind of working head on with something that is arising for us. You know, I'm working with an unpleasant sensation in my body, or I'm working with some subtle aspect of the self sense. So I'm kind of selectively in relationship with it. And I'm opening to it. So the intention is to open to it. So in that case, we may be working with different ways of looking that just kind of color the water in which we're observing. Like, for example, an anatta lens. Yeah, it's we're not directly asking ourselves to release something or to soften the intensity of clinging, but we're bringing something into the water and then working directly. And some ways of practicing are more like, sort of like bringing the whole waterline of the intensity of clinging down across the board, or maybe picking up a way of looking and opening towards experience that will tend to, I don't know, guard against clinging or just bring a reduction of clinging. Vastness of awareness practices, I would put in that category. For some people, they're very helpful in just like bringing the whole field of clinging down. Yeah. And this kind of practice I'd put in a similar way. You know, it can be something that you find. It's just like, okay, I can look in this way, and it's just going to just take everything down to a certain degree. And then, you know, there's the possibility to work with things that are kind of still hanging out above the waterline with these more directed kind of I'm in relationship with this thing and I'm going to work with a way of looking. So it's a mix, I find, is usually necessary. You know, maybe some people find the one insight practice that will take them, you know, the whole route. But I might make the argument that even if one did go to great depths with one practice, it still is most likely that the things would need to be explored and filled out from different directions as well. Yeah. And if we're talking about deepening our conviction in emptiness in a very broad way. So I don't know, this sort of possibility to encourage creativity, making different connections and having different ways of working. I think it's a very likely, that's how a lot of more advanced insight practitioners, how their practice looks. It's probably how many of you folks are already working. It's like you have to go off book to some degree. Anything else? Maybe just to come back to this point that looking at the kind of tendencies of mind or the habits of mind or just sort of like the different pieces of the puzzle and letting that be a kind of form of inquiry and touching into our practice that way, I feel can just allow for maybe a very natural connection between the different areas of our practice. So people here who may have a jhana practice, there may have been some things in what I offered just now and what I'll offer after this, this idea of kind of tuning into a frequency as a way to release separation, as a way to unify and as a way to drop clinging. That's a very jhana practitioner kind of skill. So, you know, we can play with, you know, intentionally bringing certain aspects of that practice right into the insight way of looking. For me, working with the sense of space, you know, my ability to open a sense of spaciousness, and then instead of turning that to a more refined absorption, just bringing that into an openness to the totality of experience was a really effective way to kind of work maybe very globally with the clinging to a whole range of objects and then kind of set the stage to continue working. I think that's it. That's what I'll say. Let's see how my, yeah. So we'll have, after this practice, there'll be time for questions, time for reports, time to hear from each other in the full group. So maybe there will be things there that will kind of poke something that people want to share or discuss. But let's sit again. So I'm working with this similar kind of practice and now moving into the field of the body. Let's see what happens. I think I said it up front. I'll say it again. What I'm offering here, I consider them like kind of explorations, versus saying like, here's a new practice and you should do it just like this. Yeah. So it's more like, as one moves through it, maybe there's going to be something that really is significant or noticeable or kind of helpful or like a handy little trick or open something up that you can carry with you. That's my intention from offering things this way. There's a whole book of specific practices called Seeing That Freeze. So this is more kind of playing in the area of it. Okay, so the video is not my problem, it seems. So sorry for folks who are having issues with that. Let's go ahead and sit. I don't know, probably be around 20 minutes, and then we'll open up the space. So now again, meeting and appreciating your body as it holds your meditation posture. Letting the mind rest and settle with the experience of the body. Also supporting this intention of practice. So for this exercise, we're starting with the body, and we'll stay with the body. So just letting the body, letting the attention, letting the awareness open to and include the field of the body's experience. Just noticing and appreciating whatever aspects of the body are showing themselves. What's prominent? What is asking to be noticed? For some, might be sensations related to the physical body that are most prominent. Could be aspects of the emotional experience, the emotional body. What allows you to know the body right now? What sensations make it present? You may notice there's a visual or spatial sense of the body that comes with these sensations. Or it may be a presentation of sensation itself. It's really fine either way. However you are knowing and sensing the body. now taking the opportunity to have a second look at this space of the body, this field of the body. Tuning the attention differently. Maybe softening the attention, opening it, so one can appreciate the sensations and areas and realms of the body that are more subtle, less active, or more quiet. Really receptive with the awareness. No need to identify or name. Just receive, just notice. So if there's a sense that the more noticeable sensations are points or swaths of activity or solidity that are set within or held within a less prominent background, just tuning in and opening to that sense of what holds it all. Just an open inquiry, not looking for anything in particular. You might discover another more quiet world of the body with its own textures, its own rhythms. And we can include any sense of space or openness or quiet or absence. Appreciating and including those qualities as well. The quiet, the absence of sensations, the vague, the spacious. You notice there's a holding of any sort of image or map of the body in the mind's eye. See if you can let that go. Just release it into this more subtle, quiet experience of the body. Let the boundaries be absorbed, released into the spaciousness, into the relatively quiet. It's really fine if the more solid or more distinct aspects of the body re-arise or appear in different ways. They're no longer defining a shape, defining the sense of the body, but part of a larger field of sensation and experience and space. How is it to open to the body this way? So here with the body as well, it's possible to explore the possibility of tuning into some common aspect of experience or tone or frequency that's present throughout this field of the body. To lean into that, to privilege the noticing of that. Maybe it's a quality of aliveness that feels to resonate through this whole space of what is sensed and open to. That quality of aliveness may resonate slightly differently in different aspects of the body's experience. Still can be sensed as a kind of commonality. If there was a strong sense for you of the presence of spaciousness, the presence of absence or quiet, you can lean into the noticing of that. Maybe a sense that the more noticeable active areas of sensation are held within that space. Maybe a sense that they share some characteristic of it, or that the spaciousness, the quiet, the absence can enter into, can permeate, or dissolve the more active aspects of sensation that we notice. maybe simply a sense of the ease that comes and pervades as we open to the experience of the body as a kind of wholeness, its completeness. It can be a quality of restfulness there. Just taking a few minutes to appreciate anything novel or easeful or interesting. So I'll be ringing the bell in a couple of minutes. So you're invited to close the practice in whatever way feels helpful. Might be staying where you are. Might be coming back to the more physical, concrete aspects of experience, the sounds, the body sensations of the physical body. Maybe opening to an appreciation of the group, the others who are also practicing alongside you, or some other way you'd like to close the practice.